Well, let me introduce my next speaker, Ray Humphrey, who is the security chief of digital equipment for a long time. And he's got some very good secrets to hear you today. And by the way, he has served 4 years in Vietnam. 4 years, incredible, huh? And after digital, he went to the CIA and other government officials and got all kinds of accolades for terrorism, embezzlement, drug dealing, etc. In any case, George Shultz, in fact, one of many accolades given to Ray, was one of the terrific things that he got from many government officials. And of course, George Shultz was the Secretary of State under Ronald Reagan, and most people attribute George Shultz as the person that brought down the Soviet Union. And by the way, George Shultz was a selectman in the town of Stowe, if you believe that, when he worked for MIT. In any case, here's Ray.
I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be in Maine. I'm glad to be with the digital family, and I'm glad there's no snow. I'm currently living in Sarasota, Florida, Englewood, and enjoying it very much. There was a TV program and a radio program years ago called Naked City, and it talked about 1,000 stories. I'm not going to tell you about the 1,000 stories of digital, but in digital we had murders, rapes, extortions, embezzlement, dealt with the Russians, dealt with the U.S. government, dealt with law enforcement, and export officials, etc. During a time when the government didn't really like corporate America. So I'm going to talk to some stories that are going to be bizarre to you folks. You won't believe them, but they're absolutely true. And I'm not disparaging anybody when I tell the stories. It was just the tempo of the time. I'm also going to tell some stories about Ken Olson. He was a genius. You all know him. He had idiosyncrasies like all geniuses do. And I experienced them, some of them, and I'm going to talk about those as well. And if you can't hear me, just say something and I'll talk a little bit louder. But let me tell you a story about Iran. After I left digital, I worked in a whole bunch of companies and environments. I've traveled in 141 countries, either worked in them or did some consulting in them. And I landed in Iran at the middle, at the beginning of the Iranian Revolution, 1978. And I was the only person on the plane from London. The Ayatollah Khomeini was at the one end of Tehran. I was at the other end. And as I traveled away from the airport, there were five international buildings on the street. All of them were familiar to me. And all of them had glass on the ground, first floor garages. So I had my driver take me to one that I saw all the Iranians walking into. I walked in and asked, I was in a suit, asked, can I speak to your folks? I'm an American, and I was given permission. I got up and I said, I don't know who's going to win this, what's going on, but I'd like you to think that Americans have always helped people all around the world. We go to people's rescue all the time. And I walked off the stage, all Iranians, and this small, grizzly, wizened, bearded guy came up, and he said, I like what you said. And I said, well, thank you very much. He said, this building's not going to be touched. And I said, I like that, too. I said, what are you doing? He said, I drive the mail truck. And I said, well, I appreciate it. I walked out. Next morning, I went back to that street. Every building was leveled except that one building. The small, grizzly, wizened man came up, and he said, see what I told you? And I said, yes, and I appreciate it. You're the mail truck driver. He said, I'm also the chief bulwark for this area. This building will never be touched. Now, here's the story that relates to digital. Digital, we empowered people. Tom Peters, in the book In Search of Excellence, talks about how unique we were. We empowered everybody at all levels in our company to do what was right. I had arrived at digital within weeks, and people would show up at Ken Olson's house at 3 o'clock in the morning, and Ken would bring them in and give them to John Sims if they had a problem, and John would pawn them off to somebody else, And eventually they get pawned off to me. And within 3 weeks of coming to digital, I'll say the country, an Italian field service person was brought down to my office, and nobody could understand what he wanted. He had come to America to plea with Ken, and nobody understood what he wanted, as I said. So finally I said, "What do you want?" And he said, "I want forgiveness." And I said, "For what?" And he said, "Well, I'm a field service techie, and I deliver some products in, I think it was Rome, on a Sunday that was a misdemeanor." And he said, "I got a ticket, and I embarrassed digital, and I embarrassed Mr. Olson, and I want forgiveness." And I said, "Great. Ego te absolve." He thought I was a priest. He left. I became a hero to Ken and John Sims and the rest of the folks. So, I'm going to move very fast here. When I came up, I was in Xerox, and Ken invited me up to talk to me, and we spent an hour talking about everything except security. We talked about people, and I didn't know it, but when I walked out, Jack Shields, Jack Smith, John Sims, Win Hindle, they're all outside, and they said, "Who are you?" And I said, "Well, I was brought up here to meet with Ken." And they said, "Well, we've been sitting out here for an hour. What do you do?" And I said, "Oh, I work for Xerox." So I went back to Xerox, and digital was getting all kinds of great accolades at the time. I came back up here finally to work with Ken, and we had lost our export license. And nobody could figure out why we had lost it. And you can just imagine the dollars we were losing every day. And everyone at Digital Corporate Headquarters had tried to talk with Malcolm Baldridge, and a person by the name of Richard Perle, who was known as the Prince of Darkness. He hated Russia, and he hated corporations that dealt with the Russians. We did not deal with the Russians, but he thought we did. So, again, when Corporate Headquarters couldn't prevail, I was the new guy in the block, so I went down to Washington. I met with Malcolm Baldrige, the Secretary of Commerce, and I met with Richard Perle, and I met with a fellow named Ted Wu, Y-U. And as soon as I walked into the office, Ted Wu started walking towards me and said, "Do you know what digital did to me?" And I said, "Wait, full stop. I'm not a deckie. I've only been on board a couple months." He said, "I was the chief prosecutor in California, front page of the Wall Street Journal. I applied for a job at Digital, and I never got a response." And I said, let me listen to what you're telling me. You're keeping us from doing business around the world because you didn't get a 36-cent stamp from Digital personnel." Yeah. And he stopped, Malcolm Baldrige stopped, and said, "Wow, your license is reinstated." And that was probably the biggest achievement that I had. But it told me, be nice to people, be considerate of them, and respond to them. And it worked very well.
You lost your microphone, right?
Yeah, I lost the mic, but... we also, we're dealing with government officials that really didn't know the corporate world. And you're absolutely not going to believe this story. But I guess about 6 months into digital, two FBI agents came into digital. One opened a sealed envelope and said, "You folks are dealing with a foreign country, but we can't find the country." Now you don't laugh at government officials when they say that. So I waited while they read a series of warnings to me and to digital. And then I said, "What is this country that you've been looking for?" And they said, "Sina." Now, you folks may know that was our distribution center in Europe, Southeast Asia, North Africa, or whatever. So I kept a straight face, and I said, "It's not a foreign country. It's where we send all our products from the States to be distributed throughout Europe and North Africa." A new employee in Nashua, New Hampshire had reported us as dealing with a foreign country called Sina. So we overcame that hurdle. And then during the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, We always had brilliant people working for digital, every stature in the company. During the Gulf War, again, we were notified by the government that our export license had been frozen and no reason given, and we were descended upon by a whole bunch of government agents. And after a lot of conversation, we found out that a brilliant engineer within digital had organized a battle plan, playing a game on a property of what it would be like to mobilize the American forces. But it was exactly what we had planned, what the government had planned in the first Gulf War. And the employee had given it to somebody at Fort Devens, who immediately looked at it and gave it to the FBI, and we were accused of being thieves of the war plans for the Gulf War. And again, that was another episode in our lives. And Malcolm Baldrige one night called me on a Friday night and said, we have evidence that all kinds of vaxxers are being shipped overseas and they're on a train. And he named a bunch of numbers, and I said, Mr. Secretary, that's impossible. The train would be 3 miles long. They aren't vaxxed VMSs. But that weekend, digital, we had to identify every deck product that was in our distribution line and ascertain that it wasn't being shipped to a foreign country. But we learned that maybe we better teach the government what it was like to be in the private sector world. And I remember Pat Cataldo, I think some of you may know him. Mm-hmm. We set up a training program for all of the government enforcement, regulation, compliance, etc., to teach them what it was like to box computers, to ship them, and to deal with them. And it paid off very well for us, because I don't think we ever lost our license anymore for any significant period of time. Now, Ken was an interesting man. When I first came here, the first thing I said to him, maybe 2 weeks into coming here, was everybody in digital seems to have a different badge. You go to Arizona and they got some kind of a bird on their name tag. People type their names on the index card, I think in Maine. And I think we should badge everybody. And Ken said, Ray, you don't understand. I've hired everybody in DEC. I hired their parents, their grandfathers, their sisters and their brothers, and so we're not going to badge anybody. 2 weeks go by, and at 3 o'clock on a Monday morning, I got a call from Ken, and he said, Ray, I went in the mill Sunday night at 3 o'clock. Do you know how many strange people I met there? We developed tiger teams in the next 3 weeks. We badged everybody in corporate America, and then we expanded to Europe. The only person we couldn't badge, and I mean this respectfully, was one person up in Nashua who claimed he was an Indian, and if we took his picture, we would steal his spirit. And Ken wanted to come down hard on him, and I said, no, here's what we'll do. So I went up to Nashua, I sat down at a table where this guy ate his lunch, and I said, boy, did I take a crappy picture from the Massachusetts Registry. He said, oh, you should see mine. Right on his license, I said, we badge you in the next 10 minutes. The power of the spoken word. Ken was also the recipient, almost monthly, of all kinds of letters, death-threatening letters, weird letters that we're going to make him a saint, a knighted by the Pope, etc. And we hired people that were psycholinguistic experts to analyze all his threat mail. I brought a bunch down, but I'm certainly not going to distribute them. But, you know, written in huge language, words, etc. We went through every one of them, and some of the people would come out here and they'd stop in Boston, they'd buy all kinds of fancy clothing, briefcases, etc., and come to the mill, and we would short-stop them. We'd try to short-stop them in Boston. Sometimes they get out here. And one guy actually claimed that Ken worked for him. I remember Ken and Jack Shears were walking through the mill after we had warned about this person. And Ken said, "Where's that guy that's a wacko?" And I said, "He's right here with me." And I almost gave him a heart attack, along with Jack Shields. I said, no, I'm kidding. He's not here. We stopped him. And that was the end of that story. But a heck of a lot of people that had different interests. When we decided to sell digital, the word went out to the media. And I spent probably 3 weeks in a grand jury in New York, because a very enterprising con man decided to sell one of our major business units. He didn't own digital, he had no relationship with us, but he convinced a major movie actress to invest millions of dollars into buying a third of digital. This guy had no business selling it, he didn't own it, but all these people invested. And I thought, you know, there are con people out there. If it sounds too good to be true, obviously it's not. And this guy made a fortune until he was caught, and he went for a long time in prison, I guess. I'm going to make this a little bit faster here.
Take your time. Take your time.
Okay. Now, with the Soviets, I brought Ken down to meet Bill Casey, who was the... I wore two hats while I was at Digital and also at Xerox. And all the parties on target. We were a better target than the Cray computers, IBM, etc. And the Russians would take months and months through cutouts to have like 7, 8, 9 different business people buy one of our faxes legitimately and then move it on through the system and then ship it back into Russia through Cyprus, South Africa, or Vienna, Austria. And when I brought Ken down to CIA headquarters, one, he and Bill Casey bonded. They talked about common sense, and there's a cliche, but I remember Ken saying to Bill Casey, "Common sense isn't common anymore." You've all heard it, we've heard it for years. But he and Casey related absolutely well. And here's what we did. We'd track a VAX VMS computer all through the system, maybe for a year and a half, 2 years. And at the last moment, when it was getting ready to go into the Soviet Union, we'd take the computers out, put sand in them or cement or whatever, which would break down the system tremendously, the illegal trafficking system. That was a counterproductive way we approached the Russians. The productive way is we allowed deckmates and some of our antiquated computers to go into the Soviet Union, knowing that the Soviet Union, that the Russians would have access to the real world outside the Soviet Union. So we wanted to expose, again, the oppressed Russians to the fact that, hey, there's another world out there besides the Soviet Union, and that worked extremely well. The other business that we did is, again, we allowed some Russians, we had Russians working for us, three Russians that worked for the KGB and the GRU were on a full payroll in digital. We knew who they were, so we fed them information. We gave them alpha chips that were phony and had false trails to them. And I was telling some people at the table here that in Sofia, Bulgaria, I guess, the Russians had a clean room that was just like our clean room in Hudson, and they had all Ken Olson speeches. But again, we knew who the people were. We fed them. They got awarded by the Soviet government for stealing our secrets, but they weren't really secrets. And we got a great deal of pleasure out of that. We also were attacked. Some of you may know one of the world's most tremendous hacker, Kevin Mitnick. There have been about 9 books written about him. He graduated from high school, and that was the end of it. He would go into a room and stay in his mother's room for like 8 days eating hamburgers, and he hacked into everything in the world, the CIA, the FBI, CERN, Star Wars, Strategic Defense Initiative, etc. And we caught him. We set up a honey trap and suckered him in. In his first book, he writes about how he got into our system. He did not. What he did do, he was an expert in social engineering, and he got into Nashua, New Hampshire, and conned one of our most security-conscious business executives into revealing a whole bunch of proprietary information about our work on the Alpha chip. He did not hack into us. But when I called the FBI, I didn't call the FBI in Boston, I went right to Washington, and I said, we've got the world's most notorious hacker, Kevin Mitnick, and he's hacked into everybody, including the CIA and the FBI. CIA said that's impossible. I said, well, go into your system and see if you have a James Bond in your system. Half an hour later, Ray, you're absolutely right. Kevin Mitnick is in our system. Now, we brought Kevin back. And I said to the FBI, we've got him in a hotel in San Diego. If you send your two best computer experts in the FBI to San Diego, we will hand them over with a written confession. So the two FBI agents from Washington, the number two geniuses in the FBI and computer world, came out to San Diego with two Commodore computers. You remember those? The suitcases? Yeah. And I thought, well, they were about two generations behind us. But we brought Kevin back to Maynard. We prosecuted him. We were the first ones to prosecute him under the Computer Security Act. Mm-hmm. He went to jail for a year. And he couldn't use a telephone while he was in prison because he learned how to blow a whistle from the Cracker Jack boxes. Remember the whistle that you got? And he could access any telephone line in America just by blowing, I think it was 3,100 decibels. He was a genius. A judge out in California when he was a teenager gave him a penalty. He didn't like the penalty, so he had all the Beverly Hills Hilton Hotel telephone bills rolled over to the judge's home telephone number. And then he'd use these mass mail-outs. He'd go into the Hershey chocolate family and send chocolates to all kinds of mass mailings to baseball players, football players, etc. He was a genius. He had another guy named Lenny DeSico, and Lenny was his colleague, and also a woman named Susan Thunder, who was a hooker at night and a genius in computers in the daytime, or vice versa. But when Lenny came out here, I said, we're not going to put him in jail. And we had him do a video on what it was like to hack into corporate America. Mm-hmm. And Ken loved it, because, again, it was easy to see how it was easy to get into computers if you knew your way around intuitively, which these folks did. And I still have that film, and it's truly a gem. And the social engineering that went with it. And I was thinking of when we came out with the Alpha chip, Ken announced that it wasn't an annual meeting, and maybe it was an annual meeting, but he announced the Alpha chip. And what he also said at the same time was, but we don't have a machine to run it on that we can mass produce at this moment, nor do we have software to run. Remember that? I think some of you may know that. So we put the one Alpha chip out not too far from here, a building that's on the way to Route 2. And I got awakened one morning at 3 o'clock, rainy day night, and our building had been, the alarm system had been deactivated. A small svelte, S-V-E-L-T-E, I'm convinced it was a woman, all clad in ninja from the top of her head to her shoes, got into our building, went right to the one computer that we had, the one Alpha chip, and stole it. She deactivated all of our TV systems, except one she missed. So we had her on camera. I still have that video. And it really was. It was looking like a ninja midget, and she stole that Alpha chip. So for the next 6 months, we monitored Mitsubishi, IBM, Wang, Data General, to see who was going to come out with a comparable Alpha chip, and we never did. Nobody ever reproduced it. I think HP bought it, but nobody ever reproduced it. I think those are some of the stories. I think there was no company like Digital. And wherever I travel now, I meet people down in Florida. We have little groups of deckies that get together, and we celebrate how much of a family we were. And I remember the last ceremony we had up here in Maine with Teresa Buckley. If you knew her, she was in HR. She was a great singer. And she took the song Camelot, and she sang it in the final days of Digil. There once was a spot called, instead of Camelot, there was once a spot called Digil, never more to be again. And I thought, wow, what a tremendous ending to a great family. So I'm glad to be here. I'll answer any questions. Anybody has any questions? Yes.
You mentioned that there were some threats on
Olson's
life, and you said but maybe the mafia or something, like, as I recall.
Very good. We were computer chips during our reign were the equivalent of gold and drugs. The same sources and channels that distributed stolen merchandise throughout the world were used by thieves and smugglers for computer chips. So we had people coming in from the mafia, from other organized crime cartels, from nations, consistently trying to attack us and find out our chips and steal them from us. We had unnamed, I have the name, we had one right out of the Godfather, we had one organized criminal gang that killed a dog that belonged to one of our employees, just like you saw in the movie with the horse head on the pillow. Yeah. Killed a dog, threatened one of our executives, and all of our C-level executive personnel files were turned over to the organized crime cartel. And they didn't want to use those, the cartel didn't want to use those files to threaten a Ray Humphrey or a John Sims or a Ken Olson. What they wanted to know was, where do we have people in nursing homes, your grandfather, your grandmother, where they could go to that source and say, we're going to whack that person if you don't divert all kinds of computers to us. And again, it happened to be a friend of Ken that was compromised. And I remember having to tell Ken, and he was heartbroken over that incident because it was a question of broken trust personally to Ken, and certainly a broken trust to Digil itself. A very sad story. And Ken would take things very emotionally. He would talk in parables. I don't know if I mentioned that when I first started talking, but the first time I ever sat down with Ken, he gave me something like, we're in a plane and we're throwing cargo off the plane to lessen the load, and I'm wondering, what the hell is he talking about? Fortunately, Win Hinder was there. And Win would say, what Ken means is, yeah, and that was our dialogue for the next 18 years that I was here. I talked to Ken, and then Win would decrypt it, yeah, and tell me what we're talking about. So he was a dynamic guy. But the same encryption that Ken used, and he used it carefully and skillfully. They weren't mean. But I remember sitting in my office one time, and I got a call from a banker in New York, and he said, we want you to know that we have a really phony letter here, and it claims it was written by Ken Olson, and we know it couldn't because it's imbecilic. And he read it to me, and I'm looking at one on my desk, there was the same one. And I said, we know about those people. And I said, I'm not going to get back to you and tell you the resolution, but I thank you very much for warning us, alerting us, and we'll take charge and we'll investigate it. And thank you very much again. But some of Ken's memos got out, and they were hilarious. As you know, if anybody got them, some of them, they were hilarious, but they had poignant points and management points. And then, not in the script, but just reminded me of something. At one period, we were shipping out a number of computers dead on arrival, DOA, and some of you may have experienced this now, so I say it in kindness. Ken went out to Westminster, and he invited many of our senior VPs out to Westminster, and he would say, for example, Win Hindle, you're running a dog kennel, and here's your little cubicle, and here's a laundry list of digital computers and parts, and I want you to order them now, and they'll be delivered, and you set it up. And he had all these cubicles. Yep. Many of us, you remember that, Rod? And he had all these cubicles set up, and our vice presidents were competing against one another. And Ken, with his Cheshire grin, would walk from cubicle to cubicle saying, "How are you doing?" Because at that point, our senior VPs knew what rank-and-file employees were experiencing when it would ship out a computer and wouldn't have a power cord or a memory board or what have you. And Ken, I never saw Ken take such delicious delight in torturing people. Because he really did torture them. But they all learned from that point on. And then we would put people in, some of the senior VPs on the response desk to talk to our customers. Yeah, yeah. And then this probably reminds me of something in poor taste, but I had a professor call me one time who asked his most brilliant class, "What's the most challenging thing about the future, ignorance or lethargy? Ignorance or lethargy?" And one of his Class A students said, "I don't know and I don't care." In digital, we knew. We knew what do what's right, and we cared to do the right thing, and we were embarrassed, mortified, or regretful if we didn't do the right thing. One great company. So I thank you all very much. I'll answer any questions. I have a question.
Talk about the hacking experience.